This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Could San Antonio dump the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans and become Raider country? There have been serious talks since July between the Raiders owner, Mark Davis, and a San Antonio delegation led by former Mayor Henry Cisneros. The Raiders are not happy with their current digs in Oakland, and they're looking to move to a new city, maybe San Antonio. But is this really a good thing? How much public money would it take? Shouldn't San Antonio be focused on Raiders and not Raiders? Or could this actually help the city? Tell us what you think. We're going to spend the hour talking about bringing the NFL to San Antonio. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our guest, we have Michael Taylor, business columnist for the San Antonio Express News. He recently wrote a column for the Express News saying Raiders at the top of 2015 bad idea list. Also, Hayward Sanders, a public administration professor at UTSA, author of the book Convention Center Follies, Politics, Power, and Public Investment in American Cities. And Neil DeMoss, co-author of the book Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all.
Thanks, David.
So Michael, your column, I call this the Emperor Has No Clothes column, because you come right out and say, this is not a good idea that bringing the Raiders to San Antonio. So explain, why is it not a good idea?
I like to write columns when I get mad about something. So I've been reading since July, this delegation's going to the Davises and saying, you know, come to San Antonio. And eventually it occurred to me that I don't know if everybody realizes that the only thing we're offering is public money. The only thing Davis needs is money. That's why he's unhappy with the city of Oakland. And the only thing that Henry Cisneros and the delegation is going to be able to offer them is taxpayer money. So it's not the breakfast tacos, it's not the nice weather, it's not the friendly attitudes. It's how much money can you dedicate to his private business?
And Hayward Sanders, how unusual is that, using public money to lure a private business to come to a city that will entertain everyone by throwing a ball around?
Well, it's become the norm now, David. What we see is city after city in pretty much the same boat, particularly right now. And this is a fascinating time because it's not just us in search of a team here. There's also the question of the future of the St. Louis Rams and the possibility of their going to Los Angeles, or the Raiders going to Los Angeles, or even the San Diego Chargers moving. And so what we've got is this whole set of dominoes potentially going to fall over in one direction or another. But what each of these team owners wants is a pretty generous stadium deal. And right now, they're in a position to literally pit each and every one of these cities, San Antonio and St. Louis and San Diego and L.A., or the L.A. suburb of Inglewood, where the Rams owner has already purchased some land, and then Oakland and Alameda County against one another in what will amount to a bidding war. And fundamentally, Michael's asking exactly the right question. This is going to cost somebody an enormous amount of money. Does it make any sense to pursue?
Neil DeMoss, co-author of the book Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. So this is not new. This has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is something that my co-author and I started researching 20 years ago now, and I don't think we ever expected that 20 years later we would still be talking about, the fact that cities across the country are being asked to subsidize stadiums for sports teams. But if anything, it's an even bigger deal now than it was then. I mean, the amount of money continues to go up year after year. And, as Haywood just said, we're seeing another little flurry of it right now based around all these NFL teams that are considering moving possibly to L.A., possibly to somewhere else.
Haywood Sanders, how much money are we talking about San Antonio putting on the table to motivate the Davis Raiders to come to San Antonio?
Well, when we started in 1989 with then-Mayor Cisneros and the Alamo Dome proposal, we were talking about 180-odd million. Michael, in his column recently, put the figure at 500 And I suspect we're going to be looking at something, if we were really to compete, even more generous than that. Part of the dilemma now is, while we have the Alamo Dome, the Raiders and anybody else, frankly, have made clear that that's not a state-of-the-art stadium. They're going to want something brand new and bigger and far more generously endowed with luxury boxes and premium seats. And so my guess is we're probably looking at something in the $600 to $800 million range. And frankly, that's kind of the bare minimum that Jerry Jones managed to establish in Arlington, or that the Minnesota Vikings have managed to get in Minneapolis.
So that money would be gearing toward, Michael, towards refurbishing the Alamo Dome, even though they're saying that the Alamo Dome is NFL ready.
Have you ever been to the Alamo Dome?
Well, they have football games there all the time, like UTSA, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's many keys to profitability and for an NFL team.
They had a dome, a bowl game there the other day.
I think Haywood hit it right in the head. The key is luxury boxes and selling those and having a place that sponsors and large corporations want to support. And the NFL knows that. NFL owners know that. As far as I understand, 75% of them have to agree to move a team or when a team moves. And they know what pays the bills, and it's not going to happen at the Alamo Dome as currently constituted.
So when we say it's NFL ready, and that's what they have said, that has officially been said about the Alamo Dome in regards to this deal, they mean it is ready to be dumped on with money, essentially, to get it ready to have a franchise come to town.
Well, temporarily, as an expedient, temporarily, but it's very clear, and it's been hinted, if not stated that overtly, that any NFL team will want a new purpose-built stadium configured with the premium seats, the luxury boxes, and the amenities that they feel they deserve these days. That's part of the issue in St. Louis. They have a dome there, the Edward Jones Dome, that dates from the same era as the Alamo Dome, where Stan Kroenke, the Rams owner, has said, no, this doesn't meet the standards of the NFL these days. We want something bigger and better.
So, Neil DeMoss, I mean, what standards are there? What are they looking for?
We really have to understand that when they're talking about NFL ready or state of the art, it has nothing to do with whether or not it's a good place to go and watch a football game. You know, what they're talking about is, can you make as much money from it as the other teams in the league? The Rams, you know, the Edward Jones Dome is 20 years old. The Falcons are replacing the Georgia Dome, which is also about the same age. All these teams, it's not that that you can't, you know, watch a football game in them. It's that not just the luxury suites, you want to have enough advertising boards, you can make money off of that. You want to have restaurants in it. You want to have, party suites, anything that you can think of to attract more revenue for yourself.
Okay, so Neil, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about the NFL the Raiders, an NFL team, looking at San Antonio as a possible home. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take our callers when we come back from the break. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Could San Antonio become Raiders country? There's talk about bringing that NFL team to San Antonio, but San Antonio's got to pony up some cash. What do you think? The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get some of our callers on the air. Mark is called in. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I think you guys have hit the nail on the head that Jerry Jones absolutely raised the bar for what's expected, and I think the time has passed for us to be pursuing an NFL team, and I think it's just recently other stadiums that have been popping up that what concerns me as a citizen is where the city council's shutting out the voice of the people and shutting them out of the vote within, you know, Cobb County in Atlanta and for the baseball team, and, you know, now you've got other cities that are calling the teams on their bluff, and I just think it's past the point where we should be trying to even openly pursue it, especially without our input.
Okay, Mark, thank you for that call. So, Haywood, you wanted to respond to that?
You know, this town can be very divided between the folks like me who think the Alamo Dome was a waste of almost $200 million and those who think we actually got something of a deal by building the dome. But at least in that case, it went to a public vote. The dilemma here is that over and over, what we've seen are cases where cities have avoided that. And we've got an interesting opportunity now, and that's why I'm glad you're doing the show and Michael has weighed in with his column. Because looking forward to a city election in May, we need to be talking about this. We need to be talking about, should this be anywhere near the top of our local public priorities?
But we had the vote for the Alamo Dome, and it passed because people were saying, I want to bring a Major League football team to San Antonio, even though it never actually happened. And if you put it to a vote and you dangled that carrot in front of people, people will jump at it and thinking, even if it's not even a remote possibility, they will go for it. So Neil DeMoss, author of the book Field of Schemes, do the people ever get fed up with this stuff? Do they ever catch on that there's something wrong?
Oh, they get fed up all the time. I mean, I think one thing we forget about sports fans is they may be rabid fans, but they also, more than anyone else, hate giving money to team owners because that's what they have to do all the time, right? When they buy tickets, when they pay for cable packages. And from the beginning, there has been opposition, you know, across the political spectrum to public subsidies for sports stadiums. I think what happens a lot of time in the referendums is, and I've looked at these votes, and there's an almost ironclad rule now, which is I call the 100-to-1 rule, which is if the proponents of a sports subsidy outspend the opponents by more than 100-to-1, it will pass. If by less than 100-to-1, it will not pass. But given the way this works, you know, the sports leagues and the sports team owners have a lot of money, and there's so much money at stake in these things, that oftentimes they will choose to go to a vote figuring, hey, you know, if it looks like it's going to be close, we can just hire a lot of lobbyists and take out lots and lots of ads. Some of the biggest public referendum campaign, you know, public election campaign spending has been not on political races, but has been on referendums around stadium deals.
So they basically they fund the vote so that they can get all this money, the public enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite around this was Paul Allen, the Seahawks owner, who not only funded ads around the vote, but because there wasn't an election coming up, he said, "Hey, you know what? I'll give you the $6 million that it cost to hold the election if you'll just hold one for me." And then they did, and then he won it.
And it works out for him. All right, back to the callers. William is on the line. William, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. I don't know all the intricacies of these stadium deals and what the owners require and versus what the community gets paid back or if they get paid anything back besides just having exposure or whatever. But it seems to me that it would make the most sense to put this thing north of San Antonio on 35 somewhere where you could draw in Austin and all the corporations and corporate sponsors from Austin. To me, that's a no-brainer. There's a lot of cheap land out there. They could probably even put in an airport, you know, hotels, whatever. Anyway.
All right, sure. Sounds good. That's where they put like a racetrack, right? The F1 racetrack. And that's worked out pretty well, hasn't it?
It's worked out well for Red McCombs and his partners in building the Formula One track, and they managed to get the state to kick in a substantial amount of money for that particular project. You know, here the logic gets tortured in part much the same way you may remember, David, if some years ago when we talked about sharing a new international airport with Austin. It's not entirely clear that Austin folks are terribly interested in sharing. And part of the issue that we keep running into on these stadium deals is where does it go? Who gets advantaged? Whose land gets the potential benefit of that big new project? You know, one of the dilemmas is if we put it midway between here and Austin, whatever impact it's going to have isn't going to come necessarily to Bexar County or San Antonio. So that may be a great deal for somebody who
San Marcos, wants the San Marcos Raiders.
The San Marcos Raiders.
Okay. All right. Well, but we're talking about market size now. So Michael Taylor, you know, you wrote the column for the Express News about this. So, and by combining San Antonio and Austin together, I mean, that's a much bigger market. And could that work?
That's a really good point. I actually, one of the readers online in the Express News corrected my numbers. I said San Antonio is the 36th largest media market. And I think media market is the right measure, not population. And we say we're the seventh. It's actually the 36th. A astute reader said we're actually the 33rd, which is a reflection of the growth. But if you combine Austin, I think we're something like the 16th. So there is a point to be made that if you define the boundaries large enough, you could increase your media market. And I think media is the key to the profitability and the way that an NFL owner and the rest of the owners will look at the attractiveness of a market. I can't compete with LA, which is the second largest market, but it's certainly a major issue is the size of the media market.
But it's not a given.
Jump in there.
Oh, go ahead. Neil.
I was just going to say there is one thing different about the NFL than other leagues, though, which is that media market size matters an awful lot less, you know, because every team gets a cut of that national TV money. It's not like you're going to get a, you know, bigger cable deal by being in Los Angeles if you're an NFL team. And that's why you see teams in, you know, moving from, you know, L.A. to St. Louis and then Houston to Tennessee, and teams in Jacksonville and Green Bay, because it really matters less in the NFL the size of your media deal. It matters a lot more, you know, how much money you're getting for your stadium.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm forced to agree with the guy who said nobody ever went broke underestimating the stupidity of the American public. And I think that's been demonstrated for years and years and years with this stadium frenzy that seems to be going on. I do have a question. Does anyone know of any criminal charges brought against anybody for any of this stadium frenzy? Have people actually been paid off or gone to jail, or has any, you know, ledger domain shown out, or is it just all under the table and nobody really knows what's going on?
All right, Jim, good question. So, Neil DeMoss, you've taken a good look at this in your book, Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. So swindle's a strong word. Has anyone actually been sent to the big house?
I can't think of anyone who's actually faced legal challenges. A couple of people, one state senator in Wisconsin and then the mayor of Miami, both got kicked out of office, recalled in part for mostly because of they funded stadium deals. You know, the problem is a lot of this is perfectly legal. You know, there's nothing illegal about taking a whole lot of taxpayer money and just handing it to some private owner. You know, it's not necessarily ethical either. But you know, there's no real hooks to say, okay, this person actually broke the law. They're not doing it for their own benefit. They're doing it because they think, oh, well, you know, this is my job as a local elected official, is to promote economic development by taking hundreds of millions of dollars and giving it to some guy who says he can create some jobs. The jobs don't actually come through in any way that is bang for your buck, but, you know, you can legitimately say, well, I meant well.
Right. So metaphorically, some public officials were tarred and feathered, but they never got sent to jail. All right. So let's get another caller on. Kathleen. Kathleen, welcome to The Source.
Yeah. You kind of already answered my question, because I was going to ask where they plan on putting the sports team. But so if they don't want to use the dome, what are we going to, you know, how are we going to raise the money from us rural taxpayers to pay for this venture if
okay.
they decide to build a multi-billion dollar facility?
All right.
And, you know.
Good question. That's good. Where does the money come from? If they did decide that the Raiders were going to come to San Antonio, we had to put $500 million or more into the dome, where would those dollars come from, Hayward Sanders?
Well, we have, and other places have as well, proven remarkably imaginative and innovative. We were just talking before the show started about how we managed to take a chunk of the sales tax dedicated to Via Metropolitan Transit to build the Alamo Dome. And all that took was...
Because it is a bus station.
Well, yeah, it has a bus station attached to it. The technical term that Mayor Cisneros got into the legislation was we were authorized to build a, quote, regional economic generator, unquote. So, you know, when you drive downtown, you can hear that little generator humming along at the Alamo Dome. And we did much the same thing when we built the AT&T Center. We came up with a mechanism approved by the state legislature.
So it was like a rental car tax.
Rental cars plus hotels that the county managed to get to get a hold of and use under the state legislation that was now the same vehicle for the venue tax that's paid for the Tobin Center and the AT&T Center improvements we've just seen. So there's lots of imagination in here. One wishes there were similar imagination about other public needs, I might add, but the folks managed to find a way to do this if they're one.
So, but Michael Taylor, the point you make, though, in your column is that eventually it does come out of the community chest.
Right. Well, it's not a question of how much did I get for my dollars that I spent. It's what did you not buy when you spent it on a private NFL team into
opportunity
his
cost.
It's opportunity cost. It's an economist theory, but yeah, opportunity cost. What did you not invest in? Libraries, parks, schools, public safety, infrastructure, all of that. It doesn't show up because it's an alternate universe. It's an alternate future, but it's very costly to the public.
Okay. Another caller, Cora, is on the line. Cora, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. First of all, the Raiders aren't such a hot team that would inspire me to go see them. And second, I would like to know how the NFL gets away with demanding such stadiums. You know, if they want them, they have a non-profit status. They don't pay taxes on billions that they make. Why can't they dig into their own pockets to build these stadiums?
All right, Cora, good question. So let's find out what the Neil DeMoss has to say about that.
It's, you know, you don't get to be a billionaire by spending your own money on these things when you can get someone else to do it, is the short answer. You know, absolutely, all these people could be funding stadiums with their own money, but really the dirty little secret of stadiums is that the vast majority of them don't pay back their construction costs. So if you had to sit down and say, as an NFL owner, hey, should I drop $1 billion on a new stadium? Will I make enough new revenues to make that worthwhile? The numbers would mostly say no. On the other hand, if the question is, hey, should I drop a couple hundred million on a stadium and make the taxpayers pick up the rest of the tab, then suddenly you can actually turn a profit on it. But, you know, the stadiums, if not for the subsidies, very, very few stadiums would be getting built around the country. Mostly the stadiums are getting built because it's a way for the owners to get public money.
All right. We're going to continue this conversation in the next half hour. Could San Antonio become the new home for the Oakland Raiders? Could NFL survive in San Antonio? This conversation continues after this NPR news break. Stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX, and we're continuing our conversation about the Raiders and how there's talk about them possibly moving to San Antonio, what that would mean, how NFL teams are able to pick the pockets maybe of the communities when they move into communities and demanding big brand new stadiums. What do you think about the Raiders coming to San Antonio? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Would you support a move of the Raiders coming to San Antonio? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Continuing the conversation, we're still joined by Michael Taylor, business columnist at the San Antonio Express News. And now we're joined by Greg Easterbrook. He's the author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. And he writes the Tuesday Morning Quarterback column for ESPN and a contributing editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Greg, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
So one of the big issues when we talk about the NFL and the money is that the fact that the NFL is a nonprofit, right, Greg?
Well, people are shocked when they hear this NFL headquarters in New York, the gleaming building at 345 Park Avenue. When you walk in the lobby, you think you're at the headquarters of Goldman Sachs, is a nonprofit. It doesn't pay any taxes. On paper, it appears to be a charity. And Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, who last year paid himself $45 million, on paper claims to be a civic philanthropist who's running a charitable organization. The individual teams, we assume they're paying corporate taxes, but actually we don't know because, with the exception of the Green Bay Packers, they don't disclose anything. So most of the NFL's teams receive public subsidies but don't disclose any financial data. Imagine if, say, Lockheed Martin, a contractor with a big presence in Texas. Imagine if Lockheed Martin received federal subsidies and in return said, we refuse to disclose data. That's the NFL's attitude toward the public on that score.
Okay, so how can the NFL be a nonprofit? How does that work?
Well, it's a great example of the lobbyists art. Way back in 1966, during the passage of a piece of legislation that was about something else, the NFL got a phrase slipped into a law, adding the words "and professional football leagues" to the definition of a nonprofit civic service organization. It was a transparent sellout. At that time, it was a transparent sellout of a relatively small amount of money, because the NFL in the 1960s didn't make anywhere near the amount of cash that it makes today, even if you adjust to current dollars. Today, with the NFL being a $10, $11 billion a year organization, for its headquarters to pay no taxes ought to be an outrage to most people. And you'll hear NFL attorneys say, oh, yes, well, you're oversimplifying, actually, blah, blah, blah. And my response to that blah, blah, blah is always, if it's true that this tax break is of no benefit to you, why don't you give it up? And then they'll immediately say, oh, no, we're never going to give this up. So I think there should be populist outrage over this. It's certainly not the only example. Jerry Jones's beautiful Flying Saucer Stadium in Arlington, Texas, is exempt from property taxes. If Jones paid at the same rate that other businesses in the same county pay, he would pay $9 or $10 million a year in property taxes. Instead, he is exempt. And if you're a small business owner in Arlington, Texas, and you say, I'd like my business to be exempt from taxes, please, you'd be laughed at. And yet the Dallas Cowboys facility is tax exempt.
So when I buy a Dallas Cowboy jersey, does that count as a tax exempt contribution to the NFL?
Oh, no, you better pay your sales taxes on it or you'll be arrested. But Jerry gets to keep the money, that's for sure.
So, I mean, it's a tortured logic, of course, that they're able to call themselves an NFL. The NFL is a nonprofit organization. Do they do anything that would be good for the community other than providing entertainment?
The NFL is, my line that I've always used, that the NFL is really good at two things. One is providing sports entertainment. The games are consistently first rate. Games this year have been great. I expect the Cowboys at Packers game to be one of the best games ever. The other thing the NFL is good at is picking the taxpayer's pocket. They're really, really good at that. The NFL teams have some civic philanthropy offshoots, but in my book, The King of Sports, I present them. All of the numbers for several teams I use, the Cincinnati Bengals is my example, and Cincinnati Bengals give away roughly 1% of the total public subsidy that they receive each year.
If any other nonprofit did that, you know, gave away 1% of the money that they raised, would they be able to remain a nonprofit?
If a true philanthropy was only giving away 1%, law requires that foundations and philanthropies give away at least 5% of their revenue each year, and that number itself is shockingly low. But if a true philanthropy was only giving away 1%, the CEO would go to jail. And in the case of the NFL, the owner of the team sits in a box with the governor of the state.
Right, or you get Chris Christie doing the happy dance, you know. It's
yes, I don't think I'll ever be able to get the image of Chris Christie dancing out of my mind.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Hector has called in. The number is 210-614-8980. Hector, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question in a further playoff to the previous question. Let's bring it back to San Antonio. Is there a way of measuring the actual economic benefits that SeaWorld and Six Flags and in the past Southwestern Bell and Rackspace, the city gave away the opportunity for property tax under the guise of tourism is number one or two in an industry in San Antonio. But when you stop, when they originally pitched it to us, the salaries they quoted they would give their employees at these entertainment venues was way higher than what it has ended up being 15 years later. Now we're only seasonal. Now we're only minimum wage. They pitched this in the past. Can we measure what the actual dollars were as a benefit?
All right, Hector, thank you for that call. So let me ask you that about that Michael Taylor, the business columnist at the Express News. There's all sorts of promises that are made about economic development when you bring these things in. And at the AT&T Center, you know, is an example of unfulfilled promises.
Well, the visuals of the AT&T Center and the Alamo Dome, for that matter, are terrible. I mean, I live near the Alamo Dome, and it's a monstrosity, and it hasn't spurred neighborhood development for sure. The caller is talking more about jobs and economic development and
tax abatements.
And, due to tax abatements, right? And that's always promised. The headline is always quite optimistic. And I guess I would say, and we were talking before we got back on the air about, I think you should apply a grain of salt from a salt shaker as big as the Tower of the Americas to any economic development report. You can torture these numbers any way you want, and they'll always come out exactly how the person who paid the consultant wanted it to come out. That's just working with spreadsheets. I worked on Wall Street, so I know that for a fact. On the other hand, I couldn't answer specifically how do you calculate this and can you calculate accurately. I know that it's going to be optimistic and the reality is probably not going to live up to the optimism.
So, Greg Easterbrook, do these NFL teams promote themselves as economic development engines?
They do, and those claims don't stand scrutiny. Judith Long at Harvard has studied exactly this issue, how much economic activity is generated by construction of stadia for all professional sports, and she actually finds that baseball stadia sometimes do pay for themselves. If you think about it, baseball stadia are half the size of football facilities, and they're used at least 100 times a year. Football facilities has the double whammy of requiring the largest facility of any for any sporting event and the fewest uses, 10 times a year, sometimes 12 times a year. Yes, if there was some beautiful gleaming new stadium in San Antonio to replace the Alamo Dome, there'd be rock concerts there and maybe high school games. But most days, the facility would sit unused. So if you have X amount of money to spend on urban development, and we're all assuming, let's stop to point out that we're all assuming here that if the Raiders move to San Antonio, Texas taxpayers will be forced to pay the cost. They mm-hmm. shouldn't be.
Right.
But if they are, if Texas taxpayers have $1 billion to invest
And we don't. I got to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back. We'll take calls. This is The Source on KSTX. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about NFL in San Antonio. The phone lines are open. If you want to make a call, do you think that the Raiders could actually move to San Antonio? Could they survive in San Antonio? Who could block that from happening? Do you think that loyalties in San Antonio could change from the Cowboys and the Texans to the Raiders? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Pro football coaches talk about accountability and self-reliance, yet pro football owners routinely binge on giveaways and handouts. That's a line from the Atlantic's How the NFL Fleeces Taxpayers. And Greg Easterbrook wrote that. He's also the author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, and he writes the Tuesday Morning Quarterback column for ESPN. So let's talk about that a little bit more. So there seems to be some hypocrisy here, Greg, that football coaches, you know, get tough, do it yourself. This is all about the celebration of determination, yet not so much when it comes to the back office.
Well, one of the systemic problems we have in the United States is that corporate America talks about free market and self-reliance and then relies on government for subsidies and protection from competition. The NFL certainly is not unique in that regard. But because the NFL, so the coaches especially, have this patina of tough, manly, of conservative self-reliance and then are dependent on subsidies, and this same is true actually for most big college football factory coaches as well. The contrast seems especially pointed there. And I don't really, although the owners for the most part do not behave in an admirable manner, there are a few pleasant exceptions, but only a few, I don't really blame them for trying to get as much public money as they can get. I blame politicians who hand it over to them. The most recent example, the state legislature in Minnesota, which we think of as this liberal, farmer, progressive coalition state, gave $500 million in public money to the billionaire ownership family of the Minnesota Vikings to build a gleaming new stadium from which that ownership family will keep all of the revenue. The governor and the legislature of Minnesota are to blame for that. And if the same thing happens in Texas, it will be the governor and the legislature of Texas who are to blame.
Okay, let's go on to the phones with Augie. Augie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. An interesting topic, being originally from Los Angeles, I've seen a lot of changes. I've seen the Rams go to Anaheim and back and back again against the Rams story. But it's interesting that the Coliseum has always been under a lot of fire. And if we bring them here, I'm for it. But I would like to see where we can adopt kind of like something like Green Bay, where the people have ownership, stock in where we have a dog in this race, you know, where everybody benefits.
All right, Augie, thank you for that call. So Green Bay, that's a different color of fish there for Green Bay. So talk about that, Greg, about how they have things set up.
The Packers are the only publicly owned franchise in American professional sports. It's a quirk that dates to nearly a century ago in the founding of the team. And the Packers are the sole window that we have into NFL finances. Being publicly owned, they must disclose basic financial data. Last year, the Packers had a net operating income of $43 million. So it's fair to suppose that most NFL teams are somewhere in that area. But the Packers are the only one that disclosed data. It would be great if the Raiders became a publicly owned team. It would be great if they were all publicly owned. But that would require either the current ownership to decide on its own to sell, which is extraordinarily unlikely, or that would require the Congress of the United States to change the basic ownership or copyright structure of the NFL. That's something that I personally favor. I think you could get the NFL's behavior and tax subsidies to change overnight if you change copyright law on one thing. The images of NFL games filmed in public facilities are privately copyrighted by the NFL. Only the lessees, which in its cases CBS, NBC, ESPN, etc., can reuse those images. Why? Images in public places? Let's make them public domain. That would revolutionize the financing of football, and in order to stop that from happening, the NFL would gladly repay every penny of subsidy it's ever received.
Interesting idea. David is on the line. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just recently heard that an NFL team went for $2 billion. That, for all my working career, was 2,000 times my total retirement savings goal. These people have that much money. Why do they need public money to do this? If they want the prestige and everything and they want their fat cat friends to have luxury boxes and the Alamo Dome isn't good enough for them, and we were told that was what we needed for an NFL team, why can't these corporations that are going to occupy these boxes pay for them? The average person can't even afford to go to an NFL game anymore. I think the last one I was at was in 1981.
All right, David, thank you for the call. Let me focus in on that last point he made about how much it costs to go to an NFL team. It's really expensive for, I guess, the average six-pack guy. Greg?
Yes, it is. I'll give you an example. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, near the old War Memorial Stadium that's since been demolished, and where the Buffalo Bills played in the 1960s. And if you convert the ticket cost there to current dollars, bleacher seats were $10, and the very best seat in the house, right, 50-yard line behind the home bench, was about $55. Today, the equivalent numbers, even in Buffalo, which has a slack economy, $70 for bleacher seats and $200 for the good seats around the 50-yard line. And seats go way north of their AT&T Stadium, where the Cowboys play. The official cost of seats at the 50-yard line is several hundred dollars each, and the StubHub cost can go to a couple thousand. Well, this has two effects. One is that only fat cats tend to attend games, and probably the NFL doesn't care about that. The second effect is that average people don't grow up going to NFL games with their fathers or sometimes mothers and having a great experience and a great memory attached to that, and they become adults who don't care very much about football. This is beginning to show up in polling data. The millennial generation really isn't all that interested in football. The fantastic ratings, and the ratings are fantastic, are all generated by my generation, the generation of kids who went with their dads and moms to games that you could afford to get into. And I think 20 years down the road, you're going to find that when the millennials take over the controls of the television sets in the United States, that they don't tune them to football as much as my generation does.
So Michael Taylor, the business columnist with Express News, do you think that the San Antonians overall would spend $200, $300 to go to an NFL team game here?
Well, people love their Spurs, and the prices are just like that, and they're packed. So I think people would find the money.
But it's different numbers. Don't you need a lot more people at an NFL game?
From what I've noticed from having written this column and the response I got to it, which is the most response I've ever gotten to a column I've written, people care about football. People want to talk about football.
Right, yeah, we're seeing that today.
Greg's comment notwithstanding about millennials, not so much. I mean, maybe San Antonio's behind the times, but people still really care about football here.
Right, but So you talk about the response that you got from your column. You were basically out there saying, let's bit real about talking about bringing the Raiders to San Antonio. This is an expensive proposition, even if it gets close to sealing a deal. And so you were getting mixed reaction. What were some of the more, knee-jerk responses you got?
Well, super clear. There's one type of reaction I got in my private email inbox. It was universally in support of what I said, which is this is too expensive and not right for the public. And on the Express News website, it was universally in favor of, yeah, let's bring the Raiders, bring it on, and you must be anti-football and you must be anti-progress. So it's a complete split. I found what I took away is that people don't want to take on local city fathers publicly, is what I think. And people wouldn't comment and criticize Henry Cisneros, basically.
Right, that's what publicly. You did. You went out there in ink in the local paper criticizing Henry Cisneros. How dare you, sir? So, Greg, let me ask you, Greg Easterbrook, author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. People must think that you're a heretic with America's religion.
Well, we live in a polarized society where you're expected to be either for or against something. And my book, King of Sports, talks about all the things that are wrong with football, concussions, etc. Also talks about the things that it does right for communities and for promoting higher education and so on. And I would find when I talk about the books, people would say, well, are you for football or are you against it? And I would say you can like something and want to reform it. I mean, that's my view toward a lot of issues, including my view toward the entire United States. And my view toward football is that it's a fabulous sport. It's great. It's never been better pro, college, and high school. But it needs really significant reforms in many areas.
Right. But, football, it shows that it's the most popular sport in the United States, according for the last 30 years. I mean, where are you seeing this drop-off in popularity, and when could that actually become a problem for the NFL?
Where it might become a problem is down the road, 10, 20 years from now, as millennials begin to grow up and control more income supply. If you look at college football numbers, college football ratings are way up. Got a big championship game coming in Texas in a week. It's going to be a great game. Ratings are way up. Attendance at games has fallen. That is, college kids themselves are not going to the games on their own campuses. You project that out 20 years, and you get a big change in the popularity of the sport.
All right, looking at some of the Facebook columns that we got throughout the hour, Felipe says San Antonio is the seventh largest city in the USA. There's no good reason why we don't have one yet. And you shot that down, Mike, that's a factoid that doesn't hold up.
Seventh largest city is based on a bizarre, in my opinion, coming from outside of San Antonio, bizarre measurement of population. We were the 33rd largest media market. That's what matters
right.
from an NFL perspective.
And Leah wrote on Facebook, we do not want the Raiders here. We want better roads and schools and safer neighborhoods. I want to thank our guest, Michael Taylor, business columnist for the San Antonio Express News, and Greg Easterbrook, the author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flav and David Martin Davies. Our chief engineer is Doug C. DeMore. Management and oversight provided by VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.